Welcome to the Canadian Asian Missional Podcast. This is episode 4, and today we're going to talk about practical steps to becoming more missional in our lives. Let's do this. Thank you so much for joining us once again. Today's episode is going to be very practical for you guys. Our first three episodes have talked a lot about the underlying issues and things we need to consider, but let's start putting these things into practice in our lives and to see how living them out will continue to shape us to be God's people in this world. So, how do we become more missional in our lives? We got Shu and Bernard here today. How are you guys doing?
Pretty good.
Yeah, all right.
Before we jump into it, what is a brief recap on what does it mean to be missional?
I think in one of the episodes we talked about being missional is recognizing that God is the missio Dei. He's the God of mission. He's at work. He's redeeming and he's forming. And he is bringing healing and reconciliation into the community and into his people. And being missional is actually just participating what God is doing and being a part of his work and being witnesses to bring about the message of the good news.
For sure. For sure. Shu?
I just add living missionally would be what that means locally, where we live, where we go eat, where we spend our time, where we work maybe, and all that stuff, because the mission has a context in where we're at. So we want to engage people where they're at and kind of be the church in those areas.
Awesome. So before we just jump right into the practical steps and things to consider, just want to ask you guys off the top of your head, what are some of the authors that have shaped and formed your way of thinking about what the mission of God is and what missional living is? And also if you guys have been inspired by people who have put these things into practice.
For me, just a little background, I used to see mission as, you know, either something overseas, or if we talk about evangelism, just, you know, I got to share the good news of the four spiritual laws to people, and hopefully they'll change their minds and become a Christian. Another thing that's really influenced my thinking at the time was it sounded very individualistic. I think mission was very individualistic work, and it's your responsibility, you just got to do it. I think what's starting to change my thinking was when I started reading things by Leslie Newbegin, started thinking through what does it mean to be on mission together as the church? How does that kind of interdependent family on mission look like? And Newbegin says that the church is a foretaste, a sign of the kingdom. And we want people to see that, not just hear a bunch of, you know, repeated words, but to actually get a glimpse of what the kingdom, what good news actually looks like. And other people have been like David Fitch. We're going to plug Fitch like crazy as always. But and actually another person that I'm going to talk about a little later is Alan Roxborough. He was a professor for me for my studies. And he has one kind of way to engage that I thought is actually very good in a neighborhood engagement sort of way. And I'll share that later, but he's been very influential in my thinking.
I think some of the early missionaries were quite inspiring, like Hudson Taylor, who actually, you know, changed the way that he looked in order to reach the Chinese community. And that was, you know, that was foreign, that was different. But I've often been really challenged by missional thinkers who have kind of wrestled with things a little differently. I remember reading the book by Halter and Smay and the formation of their church, Coadulum, and how, like, when they first formed it, it was actually a room full of Starbucks baristas and soccer moms, because that was their context. And I can't even imagine what a church like that will look like. They'll have bad coffee and a lot of kids' stories.
Oh, that's a jab right there.
I'm drinking my Starbucks right now.
I think like some of those writings, I think the Michael Frost and all those guys have been huge in shaping that. But thinking about like practitioners, I don't know if there's a whole lot, but I've been part of communities that really embodied mission. I remember being a part of a small community center at Weston and Lawrence in Toronto, which is a rougher patch in the city. And seeing how like this Christian community center, it's basically the embodiment of what church is. You know, the director of that place, her name is Bonnie, and she would become like the center, like the every child's grandmother or mother, and like everybody's friend. And there was like this place of sacred holiness in the midst of like darkness and gang violence and all that stuff. And it was a place of safety. And that was, you know, one of my first glimpses of what mission can be like in a tangible kind of way, where, you know, the gospel is proclaimed, because we did talk about like, you know, Bible stories and whatnot, but it was embodied by the staff, by those who live there, you know, by the church that's next to it, because they're creating this, you know, like sacred kingdom space in the midst of darkness. And so that was one of my first experience of what missional looks like.
Yeah, it's such a cool witness to see a community, to see a people that embody the gospel and the mission of God. That's amazing. Yeah. So as we talk more about what does it mean to practically live all this out, do you guys see any barriers that get in the way for us to live this out fully and freely? You know, especially as we're looking to examine and relook at things in our life and how they can be part of God's mission, it's also helpful to think about what gets in the way. So what are some of the things that you guys think gets in the way of us living missionally?
Number one for me, man, is programs in the church. Like, I'm part of, you know, pretty sizable institutional church, and at times the programs that we have, some of them are great, don't get me wrong, and some of them are necessary, but then some of them are not. What's barrier towards missional living at times is when we get too wrapped up in the programs and we don't see it actually expressed and embodied in our lives as a whole. Maybe that's how I would say it. And at times it's frustrating because you have a lot of people who are invested in these certain programs or these ministries, and we need to be organized. I think I don't want to take that away. But when it becomes not actually a part of your life anymore, it becomes segregated from your life. I think that's what gets frustrating, where you do your churchy or quote unquote missional discipling things on a Sunday or on these ministry times, but it doesn't influence the rest of your life. And it's like dichotomizing what the missional life is supposed to be. So I find that for me is a frustrating thing. And I try to preach and teach and train people towards, disciple people towards, what does mission look like in everyday?
Yeah, that's a pretty astute observation, because that's not what God desires the church to be. And often we think of the church as the programs, or we think of the church as the facility as well. But the church is the people of God on God's mission in this world. And at some times, the structure can be the barrier.
Yeah, like we're not the sent people, we're the stay-inside people.
Come to our programs.
Yeah, which is not a problem. I want to welcome you to my family or whatever, that kind of relational aspect.
Sure.
But when it becomes, come to the program.
But that, you know, that kind of gives us a thought about, like, with the many programs and the things that are happening in our church, like, is there a space for you to really live it out missionally?
Mm.
Right? Like, you know, I remember at one point when I was a college student, like I was involved in everything. Like I had like Tuesday night alpha, Wednesday night prayer meeting, like Thursday night discipleship group, Friday fellowship. And then sometimes we have Saturday stuff. And then Sunday I'm at church all day. And then it's like, well, when am I ever going to sit there and connect with my neighbors?
Your Monday Sabbath time.
Right? That was before I was a pastor.
Monday Sabbath is to live missionally. But that's a really packed schedule, right? You hit it on the nose. Do we even have space for it when there's all these programs and all these things that the church is pushing us to be involved in?
Schoolwork and career stuff.
And don't get me wrong, family. Like, programs are good. Like, they are purposeful. Like, they can be good when it's purposeful.
Sure.
And I think, like, to organize something, to train and to adapt people, to understand the ethos of the good news and be trained to actually live it out. I think those are important things to have. But I wonder for many churches, and that includes my own, right? What does it look like when we do less, but be more?
Sure.
I think it's just easier to do a program, to have something hopefully efficient and running, but it's harder to qualitatively assess, measure being. And I think that's what scares people, because we're in a cultural context. I think that's about, how do we evaluate this? How do we make sure, you know, we're improving every time, and you know, this is, and we don't want to waste our time. And I think that's the struggle.
And I wonder if part of that's the fear too, right? Because when you do a program, there's a certain level of control. Mm. Like, you are planning it. There is a beginning. There is an end. These are what the expectations are. But if we kind of go outside of that, like, sometimes it's beyond your control. And sometimes we really need to rely on the Spirit to engage and to see, like, God, what are you up to right now, right? So, and fear can be a hindrance, a huge hindrance.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You guys bring about a lot of really good points, and it's just making me think right now, too, about whether or not sometimes we treat programs as the ends instead of the means. Does it fit in as part of the process for us to grow and to learn and to be sent out to be on God's mission in this world? Or are they the ends in themselves? Let's get people to the programs, and if they're at the programs, we're doing a good job, right? Discipleship is another area. Do we make disciples so that people will just be filled with head knowledge rather than actually to have lives that are transformed intentionally and lives that are lived out once they leave, right? I'm just thinking about it right now. Even actually going out to put into practice and to live out the truth of the gospel and to be attentive teaches us just as much as what we can learn also in a classroom or in a service. Although all those things should hopefully inform and connect with each other, it's not always the case. And unfortunately, that's when things can start to become barriers and we can start to go down a path that leads us to become stagnant, leads us to become indifferent. And that's really dangerous.
Yeah, like, I find some of the barriers that happens towards this missional living at times is because our structures are set up to disciple people in a certain way, and it's almost like until they've been completely discipled, then they can finally go on mission or something. That I need to know enough Bible, so I'm going to study the Bible, and I get that too. I believe that I want to be spurred on by the Word, but not necessarily for me. It's not. I think we've mistaken that. It's the Word, capital W. We want to spur on by Jesus,
right?
We want to be spurred on by the Spirit. We want to know His Word. We need to know some information as well. But at times we get stuck on, I think, we need to know a lot of information before we can go out. And like, but yet, like you're saying, John, we want to be able to live faithfully first. We want our lives to at least be simple enough and not so busy and not so, you know, wrapped around all these things. And, you know, we can do both and. It doesn't have to be do this first. Like, know all these things first, and then I can go do. You can do it at the same time and grow.
I wonder if we ever thought about how crazy that is. Like, can you imagine, you know, having some new Christians, some people who just came to know Jesus, like, brand new. They come in and they're like, yeah, man, I'm excited about Jesus. Like, let's go and let's, like, share this good news with people. And it's like, oh, wait, you need to take class one, then class two, and then class three, and you have to pass an exam. and then you can go.
Yes, you have to formulate exactly what you're going to say and be prepared for all these rebuttals and all these challenges that people might have against you. And it paralyzes some people.
Yeah. But I think, like, you know, some of those processes are good. Like, people need training. People need to, you know, understand the depth of what they believe. But at the same time, I think, you know, God has not given us a spirit of timidity. We can't just be afraid to go and do it. Like, the early church, they just went out. Like, they didn't go through, like, seminary trainings. You know, they spent 3 years with Jesus, but that's a totally different story.
Best seminary ever.
Yeah. But a lot of it is, yeah, it is. Like, you go out there, you don't know what it's like. You know, you don't have all the answers. You know, you're still learning, and the Spirit is still showing.
And you know, I think there are hints and shadows of what you guys just talked about control, whereas living missionally definitely has that aspect of living by faith and trusting how God is going to lead and going to where He is telling us to go and loving and caring and being intentional with the people that He is placing in our midst. And that's a big thing too. I mean, we could spend hours and hours in a flight simulator, but until we actually step onto a plane and fly a plane and to see and experience what it's like to feel the whole aircraft shift and move in the air, that's a completely different experience.
I think part of the fear of even stepping outside that flight simulator is, I think for a lot of Christians, no one's modeled it to them.
Yeah.
You know, and even for me, I'll say I didn't have a lot of people modeling to me what I think now more than ever, what missional living looks like. But I think that needs to be part of that discipleship process. People need to see me and you, listener, living out that Christian life. And I don't mean being just a goody two-shoes and, like, you know, oh, I'm not going to do drugs, or I'm not going to do the wrong thing. I'm not going to cheat on my boyfriend, girlfriend, or whatever. It's how do I show people that I'm taking steps in faith? How do I show people that I'm not living just by sight, by control, but that I prayed about this. I'm wanting the Spirit to direct me, and I'm going to do something that may be totally counter to what people think is the wise thing or the experienced thing to do, but that it's trusting God in this. And I haven't experienced that a lot in my life. And I think I know at times I take myself as a litmus test. And if I haven't experienced that, I know a lot of other Christians have not experienced that.
For sure. I think we've always joked around or thrown around the word undiscipled, that there are certain things we have to unlearn or relearn in a different way in order to live out our faith in a different capacity and to be shaped in a different way. How would you guys say that we have to relearn some of these things and to cultivate a missional framework? What are some of the ways in which we can start to shift our ways of thinking, our paradigms, to become more in line with what God wants for us in terms of living missionally?
I think one of the things that you can do is get a couple of friends and hang out in the local neighborhood. Living missionally means you're exegeting, which is a big word. You're trying to understand your culture.
Seminary words.
Yeah. You're trying to understand what's happening, the pulse, what God is doing. Who are the people that are in the neighborhood? Who is God already preparing and forming? You know, what are the questions that are happening in the neighborhood? Situations, whether it's, you know, like certain neighborhoods, like this social concerns that are more evident. Say you live in Parkdale, like there's a lot of gangs, there's a lot of violence, there's a lot of needs. Parkdale is a rougher neighborhood in Toronto. And you just begin to discover if you're willing to listen. You know, it may mean you got to stop talking about the movie you just watched, even if it's a good movie. But yeah, I think one of the first steps is be inform what it means to be a community together in a location.
Sure.
Because if we can't even do that, like, it's actually going to be very hard to be on mission.
Yeah. And almost maybe a disservice if we're going into a new context saying, oh no, it has to be this way, or we're trying to force something. You're absolutely right. There's definitely that side of listening and watching and discerning. And it takes practice because, you know, all of us are very self-focused individuals, or we normally see things through our own lens. But to actually take time, look, listen, what is God doing here?
This actually might be as simple as, like, you know, like for some of us who have like a lot of church structures, and you have like discipleship groups, you have like fellowship groups might be huge, but even small groups, like perhaps pick a local spot that you can just meet, you know, like regularly. Every time you do this stuff, just go there and enter into the space where you can get to know the folks, the regular folks that, you know, that come in there. And be bold in praying together in those places. Be bold in, you know, like busting out your Bibles, whatever, right? Like just be present.
So coming from a larger church, and I know some people, you know, and not even just large, right? Like mid to large, something like that. What am I mean by that? Like a few hundred people, that already gets harder, yeah. Right? And even when we're in small groups, you know, organizationally has most of the time been about your life stage, about studying the Bible together of some degree, or studying a book and praying for each other, and then, you know, rinse, wash, repeat kind of thing, right? And I think when we're trying to cultivate a missional framework, and we want people to do that in smaller groups, it will take, you know, organizationally some thought from, if you're a larger, mid to large church, to rethink that, to even be open to the possibility, maybe I'm not going to spend time with only people with, you know, if I have kids, only with people with other kids. You know, I'm only going to spend time with people of the same socioeconomic class. I'm only going to spend time with, this person's single, they can't be part of our group. You know, it's just, that's what happens even in church. But if we're supposed to live this missional life, and like you're saying, which I totally agree with, but I find it's really hard, it's, you'd have to reorganize yourself for mission, to follow God in his mission. And not a lot of people like that. At least I find. So it will take a reorientation. How are you going to find maybe those people to do it with? And to, at least to start off, you can't be too large. But if you're too large, you'll just be about yourselves. But you want to be sent. You want to remember who you are. You are sent by God. And you're going to engage people. You still need to be discipled. You want to have that discipleship component in there. And it's not an easy thing to almost transition, to transform from being a small group into a small group that's living missionally, at least a traditional one.
Yeah, that's a super cool thought.
I think another thought for me, as we were talking about this, is, you know, we're talking about shifting into a missional paradigm or a missional framework. But do we know what framework really shapes us?
Good question.
So we're shifting, there's got to be something, right? Mm. Like whether it's like a holiness framework where, you know, we just want to be holy. We've got to be set apart. So we're going to do these things this way. That's why we shouldn't do those things. But what is the framework that we're working with?
Sure.
And do we even know that? Because I think for many, like maybe they're content with this framework. And it's fine, and it's good. It's, you know, don't bust the thing that's been working for all these years, even though we didn't realize that it's actually flawed and broken. I think part of that is discovering the framework that you're working with, and begin to see like why this missional framework is important and needs to shift.
Sure, that definitely informs us of where we're at, and to be self-aware of the things that have influenced us as well. You know, you talk about holiness, right? Are we holiness saying like, oh, we are set apart, we are separate from culture, and we're trying to put up these walls so that we aren't unduly influenced by the world? Or do we believe that we are set apart for a purpose, set apart to be God's people in this world? And this all informs how we even read scripture. How do we understand the gospel message? Are we seeing it and open to how God has revealed himself throughout scripture, and to see him as the missionary God, to see him as the one who also sends us out? And so, you know, we talk about all these things like Bible studies or small groups, but how can some of these things be redeemed and brought more in line with living missionally and to be supportive toward those ends? But at the same time, how can we also be honest with ourselves and saying, look, this program or this specific aspect of who we are is not helpful. And so we can cut it out or to reevaluate it in some way. And that's a big thing. You know, we talk about traditions as well. It's hard to kind of change a moving vehicle if it's going in one way for so long. Are you willing to take the brakes to check the engine?
I think that takes real missional leadership. Like, if you want to go into that missional framework, you have to be brave and to discern what are some of the things that are, you know, taxing of time and things that are parts of your program, parts of your ministry that may need to be changed, to be, you know, transform, evolve, or else we're kind of just doomed to repeat things and then thus maybe possibly even become irrelevant for the future. And I believe if we're following God, he's going to be calling us to greater depths of faithfulness. And we'll have to, you know, we'll have to always work out the issues within that, experiment and evaluate. But do we even have room for that anymore? And we probably don't have room to do that. We're going to keep only doing this way we've always done it.
The same things over and over.
And we have to rethink sometimes how we're going to do that. You know, at times I think the church, a lot of our churches are developed for Christians, right? They're not developed to actually reach out to people who are not Christians. So I think of one of the frameworks of David Fitch, and he talks about seeing church not just as, you know, your home base, that home base building, what people typically see church as, but he sees it as the three circles, right? I know you guys hear this, and it'll probably listeners have heard this before, or some of you haven't, I'll explain it. Seeing church as three spaces, and seeing kind of almost, and that's coming out of the church as that main table, that communion table where we gather together as the people of God, but then also seeing our table, being the church at our table at you know, my own house, and how to invite people into my house, or even I kind of see that as a small group where we're having a meal together, or we're, you know, studying the Bible together in at the house. But then at the same time, we need to see the world's table. God sends us out to be as strangers, you know, Luke 10, to go out into the world and to sit at people's tables, that people will invite us at their table, and that those are spaces to share the gospel as well. Actually, all spaces are to share the gospel. But we need to see all three spaces, all three tables, as being church within it all. And I think at times we don't see church that way. We see church usually just Sunday, communion table, maybe at, you know, my own table at home or something, maybe.
Like, without sounding too preachy, I think one of my encouragement is for you listeners to go through the book of Acts, just to read through it, you know, from the first chapter to the last, and to discover how the formation of the early church was so closely connected to God's mission and the outworking of the Holy Spirit. Like, without any manuals, without any church planting manuals and seminars and conferences and whatnot, they had to explore and imagine what church looked like. And oftentimes, you know, like we go to Acts 4 and we're like, that's the church, man. Like, that's what they did and blah, blah, blah. And I was really challenged when, you know, like when I was reading Neil Cole's book, Church 3.0, and he was saying, that was one church. That was Jerusalem church. There was other churches and they looked different and they were formed differently. They were engaging different people. And they had to do the hard process of kind of wrestling through, like, what is God doing in that particular city? And I think if we pause and we think that we are the church that is a continuation of this church, you know, like, granted, we have a little bit more history and we have a little bit more literature, but a lot of what happened then applies today. Like, we're still the continuation of the work of the Spirit. we're still on this mission to give proclamation to the good news and the demonstration of the good news. And you know, like read it through cover to cover. Only 28 chapters, so it's not very long.
You know, before we go today, I know we've talked a lot about the different ideas, but how have you guys seen some examples, perhaps, of how this has all been lived out? How all of this has been put into practice in people's lives?
Well, one thing that I wanted to share about one of my professors as I was sharing, Alan Roxburgh. He's a Canadian, so I think that'll be a good thing. But he wrote a book called Joining God, Remaking Church, Change the World. And he gives five helpful practices for this kind of missional living journey. And it's kind of like what Bernard's saying. Take a few people. You could call it a small group. You can call it a missional community. You can call it whatever the heck you want. But you're taking a few people who want to engage your local area, your neighborhood. And he says, here's five practices you can do. You can, number one, as Bernard actually said, first, listen to God, one another, and what's going on in the neighborhood. Two, discern. Take a time of discernment. Discover where the Spirit is inviting you guys to join with God in that neighborhood, in that area. Three, test. Start testing. Engage in simple actions to join with God in the neighborhood. Just take that, start being obedient. Four, reflection. Gathering just to ask, what did we do? What are we learning? Where do we see God at work? And then five, deciding. Determining what are the new ways we will now join with God in the neighborhood. What's evolved? What's changed? And then you kind of repeat. And I think that's just when I first heard that, I was like, this is so simple. And at times we don't practice this.
Yeah, I really like that.
So I thought that was a good kind of, quick practical framework to think through.
Some of the ways that we see missional living that's lived out practically, at least I've seen, is just in those spaces where the church is engaged with the neighborhood. And sometimes, you know, we're the hosts, sometimes we're the guests. I remember one time we had house church at a coffee shop Sunday morning. And like we weren't sure, like, is it going to be really, really loud and we can't talk to one another? I know the acoustic in that space is not very good, but it ended up being like a really fresh experience for our house church. And they actually really embraced it, thinking that, like, well, they had really good coffee and treats. But I think even for the staff that was there, I remember having a comment that they were asking me, like, are you guys going to come back? Like, we can figure out a way if you want to come back.
That's awesome.
So even, you know, that kind of a relationship that I have seen, you know, just as a simple practice, it's not even that missional. Like, we weren't even, like, you know, busting out in songs or whatnot, but just, you know, like, just spaces, like, for me, like, it's so real. Just when we begin to see spaces around us and begin to see the sacred and the secular blend together, I think that helps us practically see kind of how God works. Like we took, when we first moved into our neighborhood, we took what Caesar did when he moved to New York, like hosted his own welcome to the neighborhood party, and like that became an opportunity for us to engage with our neighbors and like explain to them why we moved here, like with a pastor and with a missions organization worker, like not a lot of money, but we're moving in here for a reason and a purpose. Like we love the people here. We want to bring the good news. Like we want to be the good news here.
Yeah, one of the ways that I found personally in my life that I've had a chance to put all these things into practice is really just be a good neighbor, to get to know my neighbors and to share life with them. And, you know, this started off with getting to know them while we shovel the driveway or while we did lawn work when we went out for Halloween or the people that I've met at the gym. It's one of the ways to really get to know the people in our neighborhood, to get to know their lives, but also at the same time to see like, oh, how is God maybe working in their life? How can the gospel meet them where they're at and start to have like small conversations? And it's amazing where some of these conversations have been able to go and to see the avenues in which they have presented. And it's great to to have deeper conversations, and even times with my neighbors next door, just to have dessert or coffee over at their house and to pray together with them, and for them to be saying like, oh, can you pray for this? And, you know, them to ask questions as well has been really cool, practical ways.
I find what's hard to actually live into that life is that in our, you know, back to our Canadian Asian context, I find it's hard to even engage your neighbors because we were never really shown that a lot. At least, I don't know, at least I can't speak for everybody, but I know a lot of people, they're not used to talking to their neighbors. And yet, you know, God's commandment, you know, greatest commandment, love God, love your neighbor. Is that neighbor just now contextualized as something else? Or is it actually also loving your neighbor? I always wonder, but we're just not used to doing it. But we're called to.
Thinking about what it would be like to even invite them into living out life with us and to be part of our life's story as well. I know, Shu, you invited a neighbor to your ordination service, and I know that you and your family have gotten to know the people that you live beside by sharing what's happening in your life and your family. That could be a really great start. We're definitely going to be sharing more and more practical examples in our future episodes, so definitely stay tuned for that. And so before we end, we're just going to leave you guys with a takeout box, some of the main points and ideas, and some things to think about and chew on, and things we definitely don't want you guys to forget. So, Shu, what would be your takeout box today?
I think it's just start simply. Like if you're in a context like mine where your church already does a bunch of things or a lot of things, maybe it is trying to start something new, but don't start it new. Just be a rogue and be a rebel. Like, talk to your pastor, talk to your community group leader or whoever, and say, hey, why don't we just try engaging, take a few people engaged here. What do you think? And, or would you even come do it with us or something? But, if you're a pastor, maybe it's time to think through, what does it mean to change some of our ministries to live more missionally, to follow God and listen and to see what God wants us to do? And how do we do that locally? How do we engage people that way?
I love that idea. And I'm just going to quickly add on to that. The people at your church are not the enemy. The people at your church are those that God has placed you with to live out missionally. And it's hard to sometimes remember that, especially when not everyone is on board. But God has really placed us there to live out missionally with these people. Bernard.
My takeout box is take a walk in your neighborhood. Just do a prayer walk. If you don't know, you know what a prayer walk is, you can talk to your pastor. They don't know. You can also Google
the internet.
Yeah. But just walk and pray and just kind of see with fresh lenses what your neighborhood looks like. I think that is actually the simplest step. You don't even need to do it with other people. Maybe you can do it. To start with you. And then invite other people to walk with you. Let God open your eyes and your heart to see what is in your neighborhood. Like, years ago, I actually did that with my youth. I made them do a 3.5-hour walk around my church neighborhood. And it was a light industrial neighborhood. So I had them walk like everywhere. And I think they came back with fresh perspective, because often we don't see a lot.
Simple, profound, and yet it could be the start of how God is leading that community or our communities. All right, thank you guys so much for listening. Our next episode talks about the past, present, and future of the Canadian Asian churches, what we can learn from our past, and also what we can be looking forward to and participating alongside what God is doing. So definitely join us in for that. Hit us up on Facebook or tweet us or email us. We'd love to hear from you to see how you're living this out, some questions you might have, comments, and let us know how we're doing and how we could be doing it better. For Shu and Bernard, for myself, thank you guys so much, and we'll see you guys next time.